Good afternoon. You are joining the second hour of We the People Radio. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. And I'm Erin Ryan, and I'm alone. We've misplaced Bill, and Bob's on the phone. Oh, here comes Bill. Say hi, Bill.
Hi there.
And if you're listening to us live, happy Father's Day.
Hi.
So you'll just have to assume Bob Martin's here. When the music plays, you'll know Bob's here, because if Bob's not here, there's no music or anything else for that matter.
Hi, so, I'm Bob Martin.
Classic. Hi, I'm Bob Martin.
And with me on the phone now is G. Edward Griffin.
Oh, nice. All right, so everything is situated. We had two guests today, and both of them were there when we called them. Yay!
It's always nice when a plan comes together.
It is. And this was kind of hard fought. We really wanted to do something on climate, but everybody's busy, and I get it.
It's too hot.
Well, it's too hot. Well, we let the Paris thing come and go, and we didn't, you know, we didn't really.
That's why it's hot.
Delve into any of that, and you just hate to let things like that go unanswered because it was just so ridiculous. But if you are unfamiliar with Mr. Edward Griffin, then you're kind of a dope. But you know, you can just know that in the privacy of your home. He's a writer and documentary film producer. With many successful titles to his credit, he's listed in Who's Who in America and well-known because of his talent for researching difficult topics, but presenting them in a method that everybody can understand. He's dealt with such diverse topics as archaeology and ancient Earth history, Federal Reserve System, international banking, terrorism, internal subversion, the history of taxation. That alone, history of taxation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a brain buster. U.S. foreign policy, science, politics of cancer therapy, that's a biggie. His book that you actually should have read, if you have not, you really ought to get it. It's not that long, but it's incredibly interesting. It's The Creature from Jekyll Island. Also has another great book out, World Without Cancer, and several more. So I'm going to zoom down. The site where you can find a lot of great information is freedomforceinternational.org. And today, I believe, we'll be talking quite a bit about the Red Pill Expo. So redpillexpo.org, and we've got that linked up on our site for you. If you're driving and you're thinking, I don't have a pen, you can find it all at the We the People page. But all these things are pending. The Red Pill Expo is next week, the 23rd through the 24th of June. It's going to be in Bozeman, Montana. And I'm just going to let Mr. Griffin talk about that because I don't know enough about it, but they've got amazing speakers, by the way. So, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
That was like longest intro known to man. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you cut that short. it's amazing when I listen to all of those things, and I'm glad you left out all the titles of the books and films that I did, because that goes on and on forever.
I know.
And every time I hear it, I think, I didn't do all that, did I? You know, I guess I did, but if you live long enough, you know, you get something done, and that's how that happened.
Well, that's fantastic. And, yeah, really, anybody, if your name doesn't trigger The Creature from Jekyll Island or vice versa, I've kind of been living under a rock a little bit, because I don't know if that was the first one you wrote, but that
was a biggie.
That's a biggie.
Yeah, that was not my first one. That was actually my most recent one. And this is embarrassing because that was 1994, so that's quite a while ago. But it has gone through five editions, which is practically like each one is almost like a new book, and a lot of reprints. And each one has some revisions and corrections in it. So it's an ongoing work, actually. Didn't start out to be that way, but the Federal Reserve, of course, is all about banking and money, and there's nothing more permanent and yet changing also than that. So there's always something new to say about it, and
mm-hmm.
people have asked me, well, when's the next edition coming out? And I said, well, the next time we have a real crisis, and then we'll have to take a look at it. So anyway, it's good to be on the show. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thanks a lot. We had so much fun last time, and we know you're super busy, but we know you have the Red Pill Expo. I just think that's such a kind of a fun name.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm curious.
Yeah, tell us about the name first off.
Well, yeah, you talk about most people should know something, but maybe they don't. This is in that category. I thought that everybody knew what the red pill was all about, and most of them do. But there are maybe 20% of the people out there that still don't know. Well, I've heard about the red pill. What's that? So for that group in your audience, I should say it traces back to a very popular science fiction movie that came up, I guess, out about 15 years ago, something like that, called The Matrix. And in that story, by the way, this film has become almost a cult film today. People still buy it, and they still watch it, and people talk about it. But in the story, it's a story of the future when mankind has been taken over by machines, primarily computerized machines have taken over. It's a common theme. But in this story, people are all kind of wired up to this giant computer, and they're being used for resources or something like that. But in their minds, they think that they're leading normal lives. You know, they think that they have a family. They think that they're going out shopping. They think they're going to church. They think they're having children and going on vacation and all those things. But in reality, they're not. It's all in their mind. They're just all zapped in one place, and they're just they're living in an illusion, a gigantic illusion, and they're trapped by the thing called the Matrix. The Matrix is this network that ties the neurons together for everybody and that kind of thing. So one fellow breaks out of the Matrix, and he discovers reality. Hey, I didn't know reality was this. Reality is harsh, but boy, you talk about harsh, living in the Matrix was even worse. I just didn't know it. So he's determined to free everybody, all of his fellow human beings, and that's really where the beginning of the story is. This one guy is determined to wake up all of his fellow human beings, get them out of the Matrix so they can see what reality is. And in that process, people get halfway out, but they have to make a choice. They take a peek into reality, and if they want to go the rest of the way, they take a red pill.
Yep.
But if they're afraid of reality and they think, no, I'd rather live in the illusion, I know it's not real, but at least it's comfortable, then they take the blue pill. And that's what the whole thing is about. The Red Pill Expo is a place for people who have taken the red pill in some important aspect of their lives. Now they know what reality really is. And they're anxious to help extract their fellow human beings out of the Matrix so they can live in the real world also and not be exploited by the Matrix. So we thought it was a great allegory, and so that's why we call it the Red Pill Expo. And well, everybody there is either already taken a red pill or two, and or some of them are curious about it, and they're coming to see what is this thing all about. But they understand that we're talking about the difference between illusion and reality in the very world, the real world in which we live.
Yeah, I thought it was cool on your site. Attend the Red Pill Expo, see through the illusion, reject the fake news, escape the Matrix, take the red pill.
Yeah, that pretty well covers it.
Yeah, you could have just said you're having an expo, but I just think it's cool. I think it's very cool. Yeah. You have all sorts of people from really a wide, wide range. I mean, I don't even know how many speakers you have.
Or
12.
Wow.
You have like 16 different people read on the front page. So it isn't like people will be starved for information.
No, it's wall to wall. It's going to be the most intense conference that I've ever attended or even heard of. I've never seen such a thing. And the way to make that happen, it was a real challenge because we started off like little babes in Wonderland. We're going to have this ESCO. We have all these good people there. And then we realized that the topic was so broad, and there were so many people we should invite, and so many topics to be covered, so many red pills that need to be taken, that we didn't have time for it all if we used the old traditional format. So we had to get really smart about it, and we cut back on the time for some of these speakers. You know, are really big names, and they're used to an hour and a half or sometimes 2 hours on the stage.
Right.
You know, we're giving them 30 minutes or 45 minutes, and they're looking at us like, don't insult us like this. And then we explain what it's all about, and, you know, they love it. They're all coming, by the way. We're not these guys are not charging a penny, and some of them make really, really big honoraria when they do events like this, and they're coming on their own penny because they want to communicate the idea of, you know, the red pill. They want to participate in it. So that was part of the solution, is to get, you know, everybody under the big tent and share ideas. We want people to meet each other and realize that they all have a sort of a common problem, and the common problem is this thing called collectivism. And that sounds like it's a big leap, but it's really not, because, you know, if you live in the world of illusion and you discover the reality and you're living in a system of freedom, you can walk away from the illusion. You can say, oh, my gosh, I'm glad I woke up to that. I'm getting out of that. But if you live in a collectivist system where the state determines everything you do, you can realize that what you're doing in everyday life is an illusion, that it's not real, but you're not allowed to escape it. They say, okay, you just be quiet and be a good boy and girl, and you just do what you're told. Pretend like it's real. You know, and I'll just give you one little example. You know, I've written a book on the Federal Reserve System and banking and all of that, and I took the red pill in that project. I found out that our monetary system is not at all what I thought it was, or that most people think it is. You know, it's not at all produced by an agency of the federal government, and they're all there to try and control inflation and preserve our purchasing power and help us. Not at all. I found it just the opposite. You know, the monetary system is the product of the private cartel. It's a banking cartel, like an oil cartel or a peanut cartel or some coal cartel, except it's just a banking cartel, and they got control of the government on this. They got the government to okay and put the total power of creating money and regulating money and interest rates in the hands of a private group, and it's a cartel. And when my gosh, you talk about a red pill. So, but we have to accept their money anyway, because the law requires us to. If we say, no, we don't want to take these Federal Reserve notes, they're stealing our purchasing power. They're stealing our savings. I mean, at the end of a lifespan, I lose 97% of everything I saved through inflation, and it's theft. It's legalized plunder. And the system speaks back and says, shut up, be quiet, pretend like it's real. Use the money or you go to prison.
Yeah,
everywhere you look, at the healthcare system, the monetary system, everywhere you look, even though you may realize that there's a great illusion, it's not the way you thought it was, you're still forced by laws of one kind or another, the system, this collectivist system, to pretend like it's real. You can't escape. So that's the thing that we want all of these people coming to the red pill to recognize, that there's a common problem here, and that is that we're being forced to stay within the matrix. And the solution for all of these folks coming is to break the matrix, is to get rid of this thing called collectivism and replace it with something much superior, and it's called individualism. Well, we're not going to bore people with that. That's kind of an academic subject, but it's extremely important. And we want to make people aware that if they really want to know how to get out of the matrix, if they really want to know how to restore their system of liberty and privacy and abundance, they've got to do something more than complain about it. And for those few that will step up to the plate and say, okay, I've had enough of this now, I'm ready to do something about it, well, we have the answer. So, you know, it's a big story, it's a big mission, and I'm certain now, although I started off with a little bit of fear and trepidation when we started down this path, will people respond? Will they get it? Will they come? It's a long distance to Bozeman. Who wants to go to Bozeman? You know, all these questions.
Yeah, right.
Well, those are all answered now. This is going to be the biggest event of the year. And we hope, since this is only the first one, that it's the beginning of what will be a long tradition of Red Pill Expos.
That's fantastic. We have to take a really quick break, and then we'll be back with our guest, G. Edward Griffin. You can find out more about the Red Pill Expo we've been discussing, because it's happening in Montana, Bozeman, the 23rd to the 24th of June, 2017. RedPillExpo.org. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
One theory makes you larger, and one pill makes you small.
That'd be the red pill.
It's as close as we're going to get to the red pill. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so if you had a message for people at this point, if you were going to point them in the direction of something that they should watch, I guess, or that is just really deep down into the matrix, and people just really aren't looking at, what would you look at, Mr. Griffin?
Well, that's really a hard question.
I know there's so much. That's the bad part. Winds up being like a scattergun type of thing, but
I think the answer is everywhere. I mentioned the monetary system, for example. That's a good place to start because money touches everything.
True.
But so does health. And those are the great categories, money, you know, and liberty and health. Health is a field that most people ignore. I certainly did for most of my life. I always thought, well, health was something that you had when you were good. And only bad people got unhealthy, because I would never be unhealthy. I was a young guy, you know, and I thought that, well, if you ever got sick, but then you just call a doctor and he figures out what's wrong and he's there to help you, you know. It's kind of like if you ever get into trouble, you just call the government. They're there to help you. We assume that. But then I discovered when I got into this research for my book on cancer therapy and so forth, that, wow, when you talk about a healthcare system that's an illusion, that certainly is true, because there's no money in curing diseases. It comes in treating diseases. And if you're building a business model, and these large pharmaceutical corporations do that, it's all a business model. You don't pick a model that's going to put yourself out of business. So you don't pick a model that says, I'm going to cure a disease. You say you're going to do that because that's good PR. But the business model you pick is, I'm going to find something that people will need to take every day for the rest of their lives to control a disease so that I can keep that cash flow coming. But Lord help us, let's not cure the disease, because that's the end of my business. And that's the business model. And I found out that it was the first time I came across that, I thought, well, this is kind of extreme. That doesn't sound good. But then I kept coming across that whistleblowers, people deep inside the profession, a lot of doctors that have broken away from the matrix. They're good men and good women in the system, but they were, you know, they came through the universities that were all subsidized by the pharmaceutical industry. The doctors in training, the students were getting trained on drugs. They knew nothing about nutrition. That was not on the curricula, because you can't make any money on selling apples, but you sure can make money on selling chemotherapy, you know, that kind of thing. And I realized, my gosh, it's true. It's a business model. They're not there to cure diseases. And then we look at this thing now that's really causing a lot of heartburn for people, this business of vaccinations. Now, I've always felt that vaccinations were way over-touted, and that there were a lot of dangers that were being underplayed with it. But the deeper I got into it, I realized it's much worse than that. And now it's even gone to the point where now they're trying to pass laws, and then we come back to that again, that even though you don't want a vaccination for yourself or your children, now the laws are coming on the books where you have to do it. So you have to live as though the illusion were real. You have to say, well, yeah, the vaccines are really good for you. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a law to force me to use it, would there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you have to pretend like the illusion is real. So we're back to that again. And so everywhere you look, you find a similar situation.
What did you, with the whole cancer research, did you find that there were actually, because we've heard these things quite a bit, that there are cures out there that are just being suppressed?
Well, yes, actually, that's very close to the target, but it's not the bullseye, because the thing that I discovered, my red pill in researching cancer, the nature of cancer and its control, is that cancer is not a disease at all. It's a category of a disease. It's not a transmittable disease, of course. You don't get it from a bug. but it's a deficiency disease. It's like scurvy or pellagra or pernicious anemia. Mm-hmm. It's not caused by something. It's caused by the lack of something. And so if something like, let's say, scurvy, what's the cure for scurvy? Well, the cure for scurvy is just returning your diet to a good selection of foods that include vitamin C. It's not really a cure.
Eat some fruit.
It's not a cure because the only problem was that you were missing something. So the cure is to restore you to the natural condition. And I think that is perfect analogy to what cancer is. I think that cancer is a sign of a breakdown of nutrition in several different ways, but the main way is there's a certain component that is ubiquitous out there. It's in some 1,400 edible plants, and it's called amygdalin. It's everywhere. But in advanced societies, in modern societies, affluent societies, nobody eats the stuff because it's bitter. We would rather choose a sweet food or a processed food of some kind. And the more advanced the society gets, and the more persnickety the people get about their foods, they gravitate away from the natural foods, and they start buying all the sweet stuff and the flavors and everything, and they cook the heck out of everything, get rid of all of those things that are really necessary for our natural nutritional supply. And only in the modern societies and the societies that have highly processed foods do you find cancer. In fact, it's in direct proportion. The more processed the society's foods are, the more cancer there is. That's a clue. You go to the places in the world where cancer is unheard of, and you'll examine the native diets of those people, and it's loaded with amygdalin. And you compare that with the people here in Los Angeles, and it's like a ratio of 1,000 to 1, you know? And we say, oh, is this a clue? No, it can't be a clue. And everybody said, no, the only reason we got cancer is because we have a deficiency in some kind of an expensive drug. You know, we got to go to the drugstore. And
yes, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So I don't know where we're going with that, but that's the story of cancer as I see it, that here is another one of those illusions. We think that all of these killer diseases like heart disease and cancer and diabetes, they're things that we need to take drugs for, when in reality, all of them, in my view at least, all of them are a result of something we're missing in our diet.
Taking
the red pill.
Yeah. Well, we've all heard it, but we all choose to take the easy way, which is, you know, take that pharmaceutical or over-the-counter vitamin and continue eating what we're not supposed to be eating because it tastes good or it's more convenient or it's cheaper or maybe it's just, presentation, whatever it is. We don't eat what we're supposed to eat.
We just sort of go with the flow, and that's what everybody does, so it must be good.
Mm-hmm.
The old saying, 9 million Frenchmen can't be wrong, can they?
When in doubt, go for the French.
Really? Hey, well, we need to take another real quick break here, but when we come back, I want to kind of jump back on to money, because we're starting to hear a little bit now that paper money might be going away and everything is going to go electronic.
That.
I want to touch on that a little bit and talk about it.
If you think it's real.
Yeah, very, very real topic, and I'd be glad to talk about it.
All right,
cool.
We'll be back.
We'll be back in 5 seconds. That's what I tell my dogs all the time. We'll be back in 5 seconds. So you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Did you just call everybody dogs?
2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find. In the year 3535, ain't gonna need to tell the truth, tell no lies. Everything you think, do, and say is in the pill you took today.
Won't you meet me in Montana? I want to see.
And that would be June 23rd and 24th for the Red Pill Expo.
There you go.
Is this your brainchild, Mr. Griffin?
Yeah, it is.
That's what I thought. I just didn't want to blame you for something, you know.
I think you should be proud
because that's you've got some powerful people, powerful speakers showing up for this thing.
Bill got all excited. He saw John B. Wells. We miss him on Coast to Coast.
Yeah, he was good.
He'll be there. He's going to be our MC, actually.
Well, you got Robert Kiyosaki, who's no small league player in economics.
Oh my gosh, that guy is world renowned.
Oh yeah,
his series of Rich Dad Poor Dad books.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you talk about an illusion and a reality there, you know.
Yeah.
He's talking about the illusion of wealth, what most people think wealth is. It is not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if you read his books, I mean, you'll never think the same again. Yeah. So what do you think? You think they'll ever get rid of cash?
Well, they certainly think so. The powers that be, if we can use that cliched phrase, pretty good description, by the way, But they're determined to get rid of cash, and as we speak, they're probably holding important meetings somewhere as to how to do this. And the reason they want to do that, they're good reasons. The politicians want to get rid of cash for their own reasons, and the banks want to get rid of cash for their own reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just start with what those reasons are. They tell us, the illusion is, they want us to believe the illusion is that, well, they're trying to fight against money laundering and terrorism, you know, and that kind of thing, and counterfeiting. And these are all good things, so it must be good, right? Well, what else is on the table here? The main thing is that the governments don't want you making any financial transactions that they don't know about. For a couple of reasons. First of all, they miss their tax bite.
Mm-hmm.
They want that little piece of the tax on every transaction because even though it's an expense to you, it's income for somebody, and there's that thing called income tax. So the governments, you know, want to have a record of every financial transaction so they can get their tax bite. And the banks, on the other hand, also want their bite. It's called interest. So, or processing fees. If you and I make a financial transaction and I give you a $20 bill and you give me a book or whatever we're exchanging, you know, there's no transaction fee, there's no interest, there's no loan. It's just a plain old financial transaction. But if everything goes through the banking system and it's digital, and there has to be paperwork, and this has to be processed. And then there's a financial charge. Well, there's going to be an interest on it, because if it's done through a credit card, you know, bank gets its interest, or if it's done through a debit card, there's a processing charge. So it's that bite, again. It's that little piece of the transaction that the banks get on every human transaction in the world. No small, significant issue. But now we've come to the modern world where we have this thing called the failing banks and the bank crisis and the bailouts. Now, this is really big. This is even bigger than what we were just talking about, that little bite, because when the banks get into trouble, unlike most businesses, they don't go out of business. If you and I have a company and we mismanage it and we lose money, we go bankrupt and bye-bye. Now we go apply for a job.
Yeah, we're gone.
Someplace. Yeah, it's tough. That's our, you know, the price of making a mistake and failing. But when the banks do that, no, they just go to their government partners and say, look, we can't have the banking system fail. This venerable bank, if we allow this bank to fail, well, it will hurt the country. And so their buddies in Congress vote to bail out the bank. So that means they take the money from taxpayers and give it to the banks and say, okay, you're well again, go try again. And we saved the country, they say, you know. Well, so the bailouts have been huge, and we will probably never know how many billions of dollars have been extracted from the average taxpayer and funneled into the banking system to cover their bad loans, their bad business decisions, and their corruption. Well, now the public is getting kind of fed up with that. The bailouts have become a negative factor in the whole discussion. They can't hide it anymore. They did it for decades. Most people had no idea that the banks were being bailed out by the Federal Reserve System. They had never knew about it at all, but now, starting in about 2008, it's very much in the news, and it's become an unpopular thing. So the banks have been looking for another way to extract money from the common people and to cover their losses and their mistakes. And that's called the bail-in. And the first time we saw that happen was with Cyprus a few years ago. Banks went belly up, and they went to their buddies in the legislature and said, we want a bailout. And they said, we can't do it. Our people, I mean, our voters, are, I mean, they wouldn't tolerate that. They'd vote us out of office. They'd throw us out. There'd be a revolution. We can't do it anymore. So here's what we'll do. We'll pass a law. We'll make it legal for you guys in the bank simply to take the money out of the depositors' accounts and cover it that way. We'll change the rules that have been in force for forever. The rules were that the money that you put into a bank is yours. And they changed the rules. They say, well, it's not really yours. Now when you put it in the bank, what you did is you gave it to the bank to participate in a business venture, to invest it wisely. So now it's really the bank. It's like buying stock in a corporation. You buy stock in a corporation, and the money belongs to the corporation. It's not yours anymore. So they changed the rules so that the banks could now steal from their depositors, and it was legal. They didn't have to go to prison for it. That's what they always do. They get the laws passed. We're back to that again. The laws always enforce the illusion to make it look like it's real. So that's the new model, and quietly behind the scenes, all of the banking systems of the world have agreed that the next time there's a major crisis, this is the model they're going to execute. It'll be a bail-in.
Right.
And that means they'll take the money from their depositors. Okay, now the word is getting out on that. And so big depositors, big players, see this coming and are saying, that's not for me. I'm going to get my money out of the bank.
Yeah.
I'm not going to leave my money in the bank, but they can just take it legally. I'm going to get my money out of the bank. So now there's the big rush to close that door so you cannot get your money out of the bank, because there's no place to put it. There will be no cash, for one thing. You have to have it somewhere in the bank. So that, now we finally come to the red pill. This is what's really behind all this cashless society discussion. It's got nothing to do with money laundering, nothing to do with counterfeiting or anything like that. It has everything to do with forcing everyone to have the total money supply of their own in the banking system, where it can be accessed easily and automatically by banks and governments.
And there's no way for you to you know, have a safe at home or something like that.
Well, if all the electronic transactions, then, I mean, everything is electronic now. Wouldn't it also be easier, or will they just pass another law, to look at what the banks are doing? In other words, investigate and have more access to this information that, you know, comes from the Federal Reserve to the banks to see if they are indeed using taxpayer money. Wouldn't we also have access to that, or no?
Well, you probably would. I mean, I don't think there'd be any reason to hide that information. They might not want to make it readily understandable. You know, you can go to the Federal Reserve site and the Treasury site, and you get all kinds of reams and reams of statistics and analysis and figures and charts and graphs and all that. And if you know what the words mean and you've got a day or two of spare time, you can dig down and find just about everything. It's all there. But it's not readily understandable. You know what I'm saying?
Right. To
so
the common,
there's
common
a way
person.
Of hiding it, a way of hiding it in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you recommend to people?
Well, I recommend we break the matrix.
Yeah. Wake people up so that they can start pressing before these things are a reality.
Yeah, that's it. You can't. Of course, the first thing people think of, well, what can I do to protect myself? You know, to heck with everybody else. Well, what can I do? I got some money. I don't want to lose my money to the banks, and I don't want to be taxed to death either. So, what can I do? What do you recommend I do? Buy gold or silver, or leave the country, or something like that? And of course, that's a perfectly logical and legitimate reaction. I mean, we all have that. We have self-preservation kicks in there. But after you go through the steps on that one, and by the way, there are some answers, yeah, try and get some gold and silver and, you know, get out of money, get into hard assets, et cetera. You know, there are lots of things you can tinker with, and some of them are pretty good. Real estate, da-da-da, if you can, if you think you can have income from it to cover the taxes. A lot of analysis goes into this sort of thing. But now, in the long run, if we don't break the matrix, if we don't break this thing called collectivism, there is no escape. We're just delaying. We're kicking the can down the road. So I want to go right to the solution to all of this. We have to awaken people to this thing called collectivism, show them that there's a superior way called individualism. And that, by the way, is what our country was based on. It was never called that,
right.
But that's what it was when you analyze it, individualism. And then get people off their couches and into politics and into the public where, you know, the power centers are, into the labor unions, into the school system, the media, and start to change the system, because unless we do that, there's nothing we can do to survive.
Yeah, and I think what's happening in our country today with regards to our education system, collectivism is the way to go. That's what they're teaching, I think, in most of our colleges now is collectivism.
Oh, yeah, they've been teaching that for a century.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if anybody's interested in the history on that, I urge them to come to our Freedom Force site. And I've got an essay up there in the, well, you find it easily. It's I'm trying to think of the section. I think it's issues. Anyway, there's an essay on how that came about. And it goes back to the turn of the last century when the Carnegies and the Rockefellers all decided to put huge amounts of money into the educational system. And it all started at Teachers College at Columbia University. And that's where the John Deweys started to get funding and their books were published. And that was the beginning of the so-called progressive education movement. It was all funded by some very wealthy tycoons. And they said in their own works that their purpose of doing this was to break the grip of individualism and teach the supremacy of collectivism.
Hmm.
Lovely.
Yeah,
and I see it. I see it in your on one of your links here. It's labeled collectivism, and I'll put that link on our site just in case somebody doesn't take the time, because it's really worth learning about. And so much of what we're seeing happen. How's a guy like Bernie Sanders become popular? You know, everything can be free. Everybody can have everything. And if you can't, you should probably go shoot somebody and make them give it to you, I guess, is the story from last week.
Well, and then also...
These guys are completely crazy.
He has more than you, and so he needs to give
you
some of it.
That's right.
That's only fair.
Right.
Yeah, that blows my mind.
It's all about fair. When did that ever happen? Apparently, they didn't have the same parents I did. We had a whole different upbringing at that time. We've got to take a really quick break, and we'll come back with our guest, G. Edward Griffin, and we could talk to him for a million hours, but we're not going to. We only have 10 minutes left. Dreads.
We'll be back.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, oh, oh. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. There's
they're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children to jump the very best you can. But just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.
And we're back. Yeah, how'd you like the outgoing song there with the got to teach all the children? It's kind of like the Scary Collectivism Children's theme song.
Yeah.
All right. So in our last few minutes, what would you like to? Totally up to you. What do you want to share?
Well, thanks for that, but that's spooky.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of spooky, and I thought it was also kind of interesting that he was talking about teaching all the children, and then we ain't got no time for that or whatever. I'm like, what? Well, don't teach them that.
Right. Well, that's an interesting point in that the basis of all collectivist systems is on the assumption that you can teach the kids. If you have enough time, you get control of the educational system, you can create any kind of a society you wish by teaching the kids what is right and what is wrong. And the word you used before is what is fair. You
know? Yes.
You teach them that, and then you can control and determine the future of the world.
And
that, truth to that.
Yeah, and that program's been in place for quite some time, and I think we're now starting to feel the effects of it. These kids that, you know, that were in, you know, grammar school, grade school, high school, now they're in college, and boom, we have safe spaces and all this craziness going on. And I truly believe it's a direct result of the education that they've been brought up in. We're reaping the benefits.
Yeah, it's even deeper than that, because it's a result of the education that the teachers and the school administrators have been brought up in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So this goes back. This didn't happen overnight. It's been going on for decades, and our problem has been we weren't really aware of it, or we were amused by it. We thought all those funny people as socialists and communists.
Oh, those darn hippies,
Nazis,
yeah.
They'll never amount to anything. And in truth, they didn't in the long run, but their ideology remains, and now it's just called something else. It's called, social justice or something, you know. You see this around the world in the Soviet Union, for example. We're told, one of the illusions again, we're told that the communism collapsed. Well, communism didn't collapse. Only the name was abandoned. All of those principles of communism, as taught by Karl Marx and Lenin and Stalin and all the good old boys, they're still there. The commissars simply took their hat off that said communism on the front of it, and they turned it around, and behold, now it says social democrat. But the heads are still the same. The principles are still the same. And as a matter of fact, even now in our country, we're gradually adopting those same principles. So I come back to my favorite theme. It's called collectivism. Take the labels off, and you'll find that underneath the labels, it's the same thing for communism, fascism, Nazism, socialism, you know, New Dealism, whatever word you want to give it. There's so many words that come down the pike, and we're thinking, oh, this is new. Until you start examining what's underneath the label, you go, oh, no, that's not new. It's been around for a long, long time, and it's called collectivism.
Well, yet again, we could talk to you about that for 1,000 hours. Besides that, you have such a fun voice. We love listening to you.
Well, thank you, my dear. Well, I hope your listeners take an interest in the Red Pill Expo. And
I hope they do, too.
Check us out. You know, and even if you can't make it, sign up, because we're going to continue this on the Internet, and we'll have almost everything that is at the Expo will be available through our website. We're starting something called the Red Pill University. And
oh, nice.
This, yeah, we want to keep this thing rolling all year long. So come over and sign up and get on our mailing list.
Fascinating. All right. Well, we'll put it on our website, too, and keep promoting it then.
All right. Thank you so much for that.
Well, thanks for coming
on. Thanks a million.
All right, let's do it again.
You guys don't work too hard. I know you've got a big week ahead of you. Thanks for coming on with us.
It's going to be exciting, yes.
Very good. All right, you've been listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
And every Sunday here on KCNR Shasta Redding.